Hi, my name is Danielle, and you're listening to Crime and Mystery Canada. On this podcast, we discuss subjects that might be creepy to some and sometimes even frightening. Some of our episodes will deal with serious subject matter, while others will be more lighthearted. Please keep in mind that I am not an expert on any of the topics I cover, just an interested party, and as always, listener discretion is advised. Hi everyone, I'm Danielle.
And I'm Nadine.
And you're listening to Crime and Mystery Canada. Before we get started on this week's episode, I'd like to quickly mention another podcast that some of you might enjoy. Shedding Light Podcast's first season is a deep dive into the case of Melanie Etier that I covered a few weeks ago. If you want to hear more information and details on Melanie's case, please download their first season. On this week's episode, we're going to be covering the case of a young woman who met her end much too early in life. Her name was Rhona Duncan, and she was killed after coming home from a party in July of 1976. Her murder remains unsolved to this day. According to Eve Lazarus's book, Cold Case Vancouver, on the night of July 16th, a young woman was celebrating her 17th birthday in her North Vancouver home. She had been allowed to invite 20 of her friends to have a party. Most of the guests that were invited were friends she knew from 11th grade, which she had just recently completed. One of these friends was named Sean Maples. He brought a date with him to the party that night, and her name was Rhona Duncan. Now, it seems that since the 1970s, things haven't changed that much when it comes to parties. What was supposed to be a small party with, 20 friends or so, quickly grew out of control. And I think you've had experience with that.
We've all been there, haven't we?
According to Web Sleuth, word got out that the party was going on, and suddenly the house was packed full of teens from all over. There were over 60 people at the house. So, if I understand correctly, the girl's parents were there.
Okay, that was my question, because you said she was allowed to invite 20 friends, so it sounded like there was a permission given from
There was parents. A permission for a small party, and really, I don't think it was the... They don't give the girl's name, it's an alias, so I just didn't bother writing it down, but I don't think it's her fault. I just think word of mouth got out, and people invited people, and that
snowballed.
Just... Exactly.
And this is before social media, and... Yeah. Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, so
So things got out of control. The family called the police, and when the police got there shortly after midnight, the party kind of broke up. Everyone scattered in a true teen fashion. So I think they showed up. I don't think they officially arrested anyone, but it was just breaking up the party and making people go home.
So did the parents call the police, or was it a noise complaint from neighbors or something?
I believe the parents called.
Okay.
I don't know that for a fact, but the way it's written sounds like people from inside the home called the police. It wasn't complaints from neighbors. According to the website Underworld Stories, in an article by Sean Metelsky, Sean Maples and Rhona left the party, and it was getting around 1 a.m. at that time. They were accompanied by Rona's friend Marion and her boyfriend Owen. According to Sean, Rhona and Marion, whose homes were in the same direction, declined the boys' offer to walk them home. So they left the party all together, but when they got to the point where the boys had to split off from them, they said, no, we're fine. We're going to walk home on our own.
So the girls were together and the guys were together.
Correct. It's easy to assume that they just kind of wanted to talk about the night's events and maybe kind of gossip about their dates. Putting myself back in the mind of a 16-year-old, that's probably what I would have been doing. Like, go away. I want to talk about you.
Right. Yeah. And maybe the girls had plans to, have a sleepover in each other's places or whatever.
Yeah. And as women, we know that we often have a lot to talk about.
Of course. We wanted to gossip and go over the night.
And talk about very important matters as well.
Of course.
So the group parted ways. The boys headed off in one direction, the girls in another. I don't remember in what article I read that, but people said that Marion was a force to be reckoned with. She was sporty, she was tough, and she wasn't a small girl. So I think they probably felt that the girls would have been safe because she was pretty tough.
Okay. Was it far? Did they had to walk?
I don't think they had a very far way to go. I think they took their sweet time getting there, though. They did come up to Marion's house first, and then Rhona continued on. She only had 5 blocks to go from there. It was about 2:45 a.m. at this point. So they left the party at 1. It doesn't say how far they had to go, but I'm assuming if they're walking, it can't be more than a couple of kilometers. So I'm guessing there was a lot of stopping and talking.
They might have sat alongside a sidewalk or something like that. Just give me settings. So I don't know North Vancouver whatsoever, but I'm assuming it's this is urban.
It's like residential.
It's residential, mm-hmm. suburban kind of area. Okay. Correct.
So the girls parted ways around 2:45 a.m. according to the RCMP website. Rona walked on towards her house, and she made it within sight of her house, but she would not make it all the way home. Around 3 a.m., the Duncan's neighbors, Mr. and Mrs. Holzermeyer, were woken up by the sound of people arguing outside. Mr. Holzermeyer would report that it sounded like it was a couple having an argument. He actually got up and shouted at them, just asking what was going on. At that point, the noise stopped after he did that. And later he would recall that to him it sounded like a lover's quarrel that was happening, though I don't think he necessarily recalled or was able to understand what was being said.
And he doesn't know who it was?
No, and he actually looked outside in the darkness, but he couldn't see anything. The sound stopped, nothing else was going on, so he just headed back to bed. The next morning, around 9 a.m., a woman on her way to work named Hondry Orbowski found Rona's body lying in the grass in a lane off the street. She actually called the Holzermeyers, so she called them out of the house, and they saw Rona's body lying there, and she was stripped from the waist down. The police were then called in. The cause of death was strangulation, and it was determined that Rona had been sexually assaulted.
Within, like, she was right by her house.
She was within sight of her home. So they refer to the Holzermeyers as neighbors of the Duncans, but I don't think it was, like, direct neighbors, but they were, she was within.
They knew who she was.
She was, like, with, she was on her block, is my understanding. According to the book Cold Case Vancouver, Rona's parents woke up that morning to find that their daughter had never made it home. The next events must have unfolded like a parent's worst nightmare. They heard the commotion going on outside, and when they went out to see what was going on, they came upon the crime scene and found out what had happened to their daughter.
That's absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know, for some reason I find it just, like, even more heartbreaking that she was right there. Like, she could probably almost see her home. Like, she was, you have that, like, sense of, I'm home.
I'm safe.
You
know? I'm
yeah.
there.
Like, as young women, we've all had those moments that we've probably walked places that we shouldn't late at night. And you have those moments as it's happening that you're like, crap, I probably should be doing this. And then you see your apartment or your house or whatever, and you're like, okay, all right, I'm there. Like, I just need to get in. And then this terrible thing happened to her.
I wonder as well, because there's been a couple of cases I've covered recently that what happened was, again, within sight, within blocks of the person's house. And I'm wondering if there's a certain sense of security when you're in your neighborhood.
Of course, you let your guard down.
Right.
Yeah.
And I say that while knowing full well that everyone should be able to walk safely in their neighborhood. But unfortunately, the reality is that that's not always true. And just as a woman, you often think of those things like, oh yeah, I'm alone on the street at night, I should take my headphones out because I need to listen to what's going on around me. Or I'll leave them in my ears or turn my music off just so it looks like I'm doing something, yeah. But I'm actually not. So.
And she might have, like, seen someone approaching her and thought, like, this is a neighbor, I know everyone around here. Like, I'm there's nothing to be scared of. There's nothing to be worried about. Like, her guard definitely would have been down.
Yeah, and it's hard to know even if the people arguing had anything to do with it. It could have been something completely separate, but it was in the same area around that time. So more than likely that argument that was overheard was her. But at the same time, I've lived in a city where you would hear people yelling and shouting at each other all the time, and I've never called the police.
Right. Like, I'm wondering, oh, so you think it was her having some sort of altercation with someone?
We don't know that for sure.
Yeah.
But the timing, like, she left Marion at 2:45 and this happened at 3.
Yeah.
And it happened outside the window in the area where her body was found. So it's hard to
believe. It can't be someone else. Because if it was someone else,
they would have seen something.
They would have seen something, or it would have deterred someone from attacking her. Do you know what I mean? Being like, oh, there's two people over there, mm-hmm. potential witnesses, like, whatever. So yeah, it must have been her, and maybe she knew the person.
Possibly.
Maybe there was a verbal exchange before it happened. I mean, what is, like, statistically, it's pretty high that often especially with sexual assault, that the people know their victims.
Yep.
So it could have been someone she knew and thought she could, I don't know, just persuade him.
Or maybe it was just an argument, like she thought it was nothing, right? Where it wasn't going to escalate to that point. It's hard to know exactly what happened. All the neighbors described Rona as a nice, quiet girl who was well-behaved. She was petite, only about 5'4 and 110 pounds. Her boyfriend, Sean, would be interviewed the same night Rona's body was found, but by all accounts, it seems like he was really cooperative with the police. He wanted to help them in whichever way he could. The RCMP took his clothes in for evidence, and he took a polygraph test. He reported later that he felt guilty about not walking Rona home that night. He wanted to do everything he could to help the police find out what had happened to his girlfriend.
Of course. What about the guy that was with him?
There's no mention of him, but I don't think that...
He was on the radar?
Yeah, I don't think so.
And he would have also known that she was walking home by herself. He could have possibly known she was walking for a period of time by herself.
They, and I think I get to this pretty soon, but they did end up getting, I believe, DNA and polygraphing like pretty much every man she'd ever been in contact with, and nothing came up.
Was there DNA on her body?
So not in 1976, right. But later on they ended up getting DNA, okay. But it didn't hit nothing anything. Matched. No hits, no. So there was some speculation, it's online and it's also mentioned in Eve Lazarus's book, that the reason that Rona was adamant that she didn't want her boyfriend to walk her home that night may have been because she was meeting someone else. I mean, I suppose it's possible, but it just seems unlikely to me. Like, that whole splitting up just sounds like two best friends wanting to walk home, but also, as a woman sometimes, you just don't want that... I don't even know how to word this properly, but you're just like, I'm fine on my own. I can take care of myself. Yeah. Let me walk home alone. Like, I'm not that much of a delicate flower that I can't walk 5 blocks to my house.
And she was with her friend. So what did her friend, like, her friend would have accounted for her whereabouts from 2:45 to, I'm assuming they would have been able to put the time of death, you know, within a couple hours. So, I mean, unless she left her friends at what, 2:45 and then met someone after that, again, this is before the time of texting and cell phones and immediate availability of everyone. So she would have had to have spent all that time with her friend, which it sounds like they dilly-dallied on their way to her place, and then met someone. I mean, of course, all within the realm of possibility.
It feels like a stretch.
Yeah.
Like, the more plausible scenario to me is that someone saw the girls walking home alone that night and followed them. And then when Marion went into her house, continued to follow Rona, or that someone maybe targeted her at the party and then followed everyone, and once she split away from the group, just kind of saw a chance.
Or it could have just been a crime of opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? A young, beautiful girl walking the streets alone, unfortunately, at 3 a.m., the wrong person drove by or walked by and...
Yep, for sure. And the thing I was thinking as well is those parties, like, getting out of hand. It was a high school party, but you know how those things are. When people start showing up, sometimes unsavory characters turn up that would never... They're not in high school. They're not anyone you would hang out with, but they somehow make their way there.
And did anyone... I'm sure they would have interviewed everyone at the party. No one mentioned...
So first of all, no one really remembers anyone paying extra attention to Rona during the party. Her boyfriend says that he was actually really busy just focusing on her and the conversation they were having. They were a pretty new couple, so just still trying to get to know her, and it was probably, like, exciting and fun. So he said if anyone else was sort of staring at her or ogling her, he never would have noticed because he only had eyes for her, essentially. He wasn't watching for that. Now, the police wanted a guest list from the party, but they couldn't. There was too many unfamiliar people there once everyone started showing up. So it was hard to say exactly who's there. Maybe some people I didn't see showed up. So it's really hard for them to give them a complete guest list beyond the people that had been invited.
Right. There would have been so many unfamiliar faces.
Exactly. Now, another thing that's talked about is there'd been an attempted abduction in the area of a 16-year-old girl just hours before Rona's attack. Also, a few days before, a woman was assaulted in North Vancouver.
This is very significant.
So the police wondered if these events were linked. The woman who survived the attempted assault described her attacker as having dark brown shoulder-length hair, a brown mustache, and this description was actually similar to that of a man that was seen in the area where Rona was killed around the time of her death.
Seen by neighbors, like, around that same time, or just it's just
I think as it vague might have, as that? Yeah, it's okay. As vague as that. Now, that description to me, dark brown shoulder-length hair, brown mustache, it's the 70s.
I was going to say, sounds like 80% of the men right. in the late 70s.
A lot of the men in the 70s, so it's pretty vague. There is also mention of, like, a girl at the party saying that she actually saw Rona and Marion, like, splitting up when Marion got to her house. She said she was never questioned by the police. But again, she may have been one of those people at the party that they didn't even know was there. And at 16, you won't necessarily think I'm going to come forward and say I saw this, because a lot of times people don't know that they know something important.
Yeah.
I think she saw them split up and, like, had these feelings of guilt all her life, mm-hmm. but she doesn't actually remember seeing anything of significance. A list of 172 men was compiled, including all of Rona's friends and acquaintances and men from the area that had histories of sexual assault, according to the RCMP website. Polygraphs were given and many interviews were done, but no suspect emerged. A task force was actually put together to look at several crimes around the province, looking for a potential serial killer. I didn't dive into that too much because it doesn't look like it really went anywhere, but they thought that maybe they did have a serial killer on their hands. In 1998, the police were able to obtain a DNA sample from some of the evidence linked to Rona's case, but no match was found. And that's what's really frustrating about finding DNA, is that if that person's not in the database, it's useless.
Yeah, it would give you such hope.
I know.
Like, as the parents and family, and even as the RCMP detectives that worked that case, you know, you would just have, like, oh my God, there's something. That's a huge new lead.
Right.
And then it turns into nothing. I mean, one day there might be a match.
There's a lot of historical cases being solved nowadays because of DNA matches. It might come to something. That person, if they were 20 years old and 76, like, they'd still be 50s, around.
Late, yeah.
And they could still end up in jail or still end up in a database somehow. So there's still hope.
And chances are, if they've unfortunately done this once, they've probably done it again. So it's just a matter of for the police to catch a break somehow.
Right. I feel like it's pretty rare, the cases where someone does this as a one-off and never commits another crime in their life. It probably happens, but again, I think it's quite rare.
Yeah, and I think it would be more of, like, often, like a crime of passion or a domestic abuse or something like that. But this seems to be something, I mean, whether they knew
it was more of an opportunity, crime of opportunity.
Yeah.
So the case remains unsolved to this day. So 98 was more or less the last time we had any information on it, or when there was a DNA hit. The police have actually tried to go through and contact all of those men that they had originally had contact with to try and get a DNA match, but some of them have died. Some of them are off the map and they can't find them. So that's been really difficult, but they've eliminated as many as they could. So everyone they were able to find, they've eliminated. Anyone that has any information about Rona Duncan's death is asked to contact Sergeant Jerry Webb of the North Vancouver Detachment Serious Crime Section. The number there is 604-983-7417, or you can call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-8477.
That's sad. I feel so bad for that family. Like, it's just one of those situations where when I hear stories like that, I think, that could have been me, that could have been you. Like, we've all been in those situations at 17 where you go to a party, you know, it gets busted or shut down or whatever, and you walk home with friends or you drive home with friends or whatever, and, like, it was just a normal night for her. And really, up to the fact that she split from Marion from, you know, a short bit of a walk home, she did everything right.
Yep.
Right? Like, they left as a group, she walked with her friend, like, other than, I guess, being out at almost 3 a.m., but I mean, it's 17, that's exciting, that's cool, that's, you know.
It's summer, you're off, you're just having fun. And I know we've talked about this before, but again, I wouldn't have walked home at 17 because I lived in the middle of nowhere, so there was nowhere to walk home from.
Yeah.
But as a young adult, as soon as I moved out of the house, it's something I did regularly, alone regularly, and I never thought about it twice.
I know.
And you and I, have walked home together.
Many nights.
Many nights. Probably not in a state where we should have been on the street.
Right.
And now this was a lot of years ago, but like, I think about that too. And,
you know, that night would have just been a typical coming of age thing that you do exactly. at 16. And, you know, she has her new boyfriend. It's summer. You know, you just finished grade 11. You're about to go into your senior year. Like, it's just this big, exciting thing. And
I guess the whole point of that is that it's just something that happens every single day. And most of us never pay that ultimate price. But also, it shouldn't be an issue. We should be able to walk home. Like, those decisions should not be life-altering.
Yeah.
So we're going to finish up tonight's episode with a moment of kindness, like we always do. I have one that was shared from one of our listeners. It was shared a few weeks ago, but we had other things recorded already, so we're going to talk about it tonight. So the listener says that a young girl was driving in their neighborhood where they live, and it's really steep hills. It's in the St. John area, so you know yeah. how that is. Her brakes actually let go and she hit a tree.
Oh, no.
She wasn't badly hurt or anything, but she was pretty shaken up. So the listener's husband actually rushed over, helped her, just got her sorted out and sent her on her way. And she thanked him and left. And a few hours later, her parents actually showed up to their house to thank him profusely for helping their daughter and just being there when she needed some help. And I thought that was a cute story because it's like a double moment of kindness where he actually sort of went out and made sure someone was okay and made sure that they were calm and, you know, able to continue on. And then on the other side, her parents didn't have to come over and thank him, but actually took the time to go out and say thank you. So,
oh, that is sweet. That yeah. is nice.
I just wanted to add that I am trying to put together a Halloween episode. So if life goes as planned, I should have an episode out on Halloween day and then my usual episode on the Sunday. I think we're going to try to do a compilation of ghost stories or paranormal experiences that people have had. Hopefully it'll come together on time and everyone can enjoy a creepier episode. Thanks to everyone who's been listening. If you could take a minute to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, that would be greatly appreciated. You can follow us on Instagram at Crime and Mystery Canada. You can write us at crimeandmysterycanada@gmail.com or find our Facebook group, Crime and Mystery Canada. As always, stay safe out there and have a good night.
Good night, everyone.